Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome today to our podcast segment. We once again had the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Greg Johnson. He is the CEO, owner, founder of one of the leading pen testing firms out on the West Coast in the Utah area. It's called WebCheck Security. And Greg is also the co-author of the great and upcoming book on web app testing. And he is also a leading contributor to an upcoming book on artificial intelligence and cybersecurity. Greg, let's go ahead and get started. If you can give a background about yourself and WebCheck Security, and if you can also introduce our guest, Mr. Kurt Jepson. He is a leading pen tester for WebCheck Security as well. Gentlemen, thank you for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Hey, thanks, Ravi. It's absolutely a privilege and a pleasure to be back here with you. For the listening audience here, Ravi is a prolific writer as well. I guess, Ravi, we're not J.K. Rowling or anything, but this book coming out about web application security kind of covers a lot of bases, doesn't it, with regards to infrastructure and cybersecurity?
Yep, it does. In fact, as you know, web application security, it's now the big thing coming up with, you know, COVID right now. It's really the big one of the top security issues. So I think this book is very timely and will help address those issues.
Yes, indeed. And perfect segue into my dear friend and VP of engineering, Kurt Jepson, and also the owner of his own practice, Cerulean Security. He does a number of things, but we'll let Kurt introduce himself. But just quickly, he's too humble to say that he has a CISSP, an OSCP, which is a highly coveted penetration test certification. He also has a master's degree in cybersecurity. And we were joking that not only was he a Marine, but he was an Eagle Scout. So with that intro, Kurt, say hello.
Hi, that covers me really well. Hi, and nice to meet you, Ravi, and thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. It's my honor and privilege. Thank you both. Now, Greg, let's go ahead and review for our audience. I know we've talked about this before in previous podcasts, but what is penetration testing, and why is it so important, and what is it, especially during the times that we're going through right now?
Sure, absolutely. And to introduce that subject, let me share with the audience how I became introduced to penetration testing back in 2006, and also a segue to how Kurt came into the story here, because this is a good story. Back in 2006, Ravi, I joined a prominent PCI organization that stands for payment card industry, and they were doing audits that were required for processors of cards and by the processors of the cards and their service providers and large organizations that needed to certify their PCI or payment card compliance in order to continue taking or processing cards. So it covered both the service providers and the merchants together. That was really my big intro into framework cybersecurity and all the controls and requirements. And of course, penetration testing was one of those things. And I remember my first question to one of the penetration testers, well, what is it and how is it different from our vulnerability scans? And I think for our audience, particularly a layperson that may be familiar with some aspects of cybersecurity and not all, the terms sometimes get confused. I like to refer to a vulnerability scan as kind of the peeling of the onion layer. That's where, say, a server, a Windows server, for example, to use a common object, is scanned, and the test comes back and says, well, the Windows operating system is out of date, and there are a number of other things in this server that make it vulnerable, and then the report says what you have to do to fix it. That's a scan, but what it doesn't do, and this is where Kurt comes in, is he begins to exploit those vulnerabilities not in a malicious way, but as a benevolent hacker to document the further exploits and problems that are exposed by that and other vulnerabilities. So you get what I call a penetration, is a real-world simulated attack conducted by an experienced hacker, but certified and with benevolent intent. And that intent really is to make our clients better and to help them improve their cybersecurity posture. So just quick story at how I got involved with Kurt is I was at that cybersecurity PCI compliance company for about 6.5 years. And then not long after, I had an opportunity as an executive vice president of cyber strategy and sales to build out a cybersecurity practice for a young CEO and his new company. And that was a great experience. And one day, as you know, we were looking for penetration test contractors. The fellow we were using at the time wasn't getting the documentation quite right, and he wasn't quite following through and testing all of the targets quite right. And so as I was scrolling through different things on LinkedIn, up comes this profile of this amazing dude, Kurt Jepson. And so we connected on LinkedIn. I reached out and said, hey, you do contract work? And it was just the stars aligned and the gods of cybersecurity smiled on us. And Kurt started doing these contracts for me. And I found that he was really good. And we just enjoyed each other's presence and relationship. And so years later, I moved to another company, brought Kurt with me. And found out that years before I had actually acted on stage in the production Beauty and the Beast in a prominent theater in Salt Lake City. I was Gaston, and his wife Emily was Belle. And it wasn't until Kurt, maybe 4 years later.
Yep. It took about that, 4 years for us to figure that out.
About 4 years later, we figured that out, and so we kind of have this. We're bound together here by more than just cybersecurity. Kurt grew up in Utah. He now is in Manhattan. I initially grew up in Utah, moved away for 12 years, and then have come back with lots of ties there. Penetration testing. That's what Kurt does. He's an engineer fundamentally. He reverse engineers perimeters and applications, and he tries to get into them. Anything you'd add to that, Kurt?
Just that it was really interesting because when we finally figured out, I think it was you that brought it up. You said, hey, didn't I do a show with Emily Jepson? That sounds familiar. And then come to find, yes. And there's pictures out there on the internet of you and her and the Beast, the person that played Beast. And it's just a really great link. We never actually met in person, and it was really great to know that actually we had met at one time. So.
Yep. That is true.
Excellent. So, Kurt, let's get into the real meat of today's discussion. Take us into the mind of a hacker. In so doing, you're helping us to understand what goes on behind a penetration tester. Let's say I'm going to gain access to XYZ Corporation. How does the hacker do that? Give us the psychology and what the mindset is. Like, how do you break down those walls of defenses?
Well, the main reason why hackers are so successful is companies experience churn, and companies are all constantly moving. They're trying to constantly adapt to the market and make money and do well. And oftentimes, pieces of the IT environment get lost or forgotten or neglected during that time. And so oftentimes when I'm doing my work, I come across something, and then I'll go to the person about it, and I'll say, hey, I found this and did this. And they're like, oh, I forgot that server was even there, or I haven't patched that in a while. I didn't even know that was a thing. And then the secondary that comes along with this, hackers are sneaky. They do things in ways that programs don't think of. They do things in ways that the average IT person never thought of. And that's how they are able to get past what the normal engineer probably thought was impossible. So to break it down, For when I do pen tests and to make sure that I'm thorough, I use a methodology. It's based off of the NIST methodology for pen tests, which will usually include a recon phase, which is a passive reconnaissance where I'm searching the internet for anything like user accounts, GitHub accounts that have keys in them, credentials, open SSH, AWS buckets, things like that, and then an active recon where I'm trying to figure out what's actually going on the site and understand it. Once I understand how the site works, I will go into an exploitation phase where I will try and find I'll discover everything I can. So I've got the discovery phase where I'm looking at all the necessary software that's installed, what's running there, how it works. And then then once I go through that for the discovery phase, I'll go through the exploitation phase and exploit what I can, and then I'll do a post-exploitation phase where I try and take that access that I received and get new access. So, for example, a good story, just recently we were doing a pen test and a company found, I found a telnet open port on a company's systems. It was internal. And that port allowed me to see a username and password, but the password was encrypted, and I couldn't break it. It was it was a good password, but it also had all the usernames. And I saw that one of the usernames was the default username. So me, being the hacker, because hackers thinking with a human brain versus a program, I said, let's go just try the default password for that default user and on the GUI. Tried that, got in. Now I was into their switch. And it was a switch they'd forgotten about. They had just not removed that default username and password, but now I had admin access to that entire portion of their network. Things like that. So we follow a true methodology, a time and tested methodology, and we're very thorough. But it's really the human element that makes it so the hacker can be able to get past what the defenses and get past what and do things that the engineers never thought that they could do.
Okay, excellent. Now, Kurt, Greg and I have done a few podcasts where pen testing is addressed, and there are different kinds of or different aspects to it, as well as many different attack vectors, especially with what's coming out of COVID-19. There's social engineering, Wi-Fi, mobile threats, so forth. Can you tell our listeners about the different kinds of tests that exist out there, and how do you approach them?
Sure, they're all different. Everyone is different. So let's go through the ones you listed. So social engineering, phishing, that is still a major, major attack avenue for attackers. It still factors into 90, 95% of all successful breaches, either at the beginning or in the middle of or even near the end of that attack. Then you have your Wi-Fi access, which means that I need to be nearby or I need to have a box nearby to try and break into your Wi-Fi. Then you've got your web application pen tests. Those ones are big. They're basically because then I can reach you from the internet, I can reach you from anywhere, and I'm going to be looking for anything that you did wrong. I'm going to go comb through every page on your site, every form field, every single inputted variable I'm going to check. And then I'm going to be looking for pages you forgot about, things that maybe that aren't listed, you can't browse to, but I could brute force my way to. I'm going to be looking at the configuration of the back end of the system to see what software you use. And if you haven't patched that, like a WordPress, if you have a WordPress plugin you haven't patched, I'm going to try and exploit that plugin. And then use that to break into the web apps. Then you have your external pen test where I'm looking at what ports you have open to the internet. Do you have an SSH port open that I can use? Does it allow root login? Does it allow brute forcing credentials? Can I lock someone out? Do I need an SSH key? Things like that. And then finally, there's internal pen tests. Internal pen tests are their own animal in many ways that people – this is where I get to trick a lot of IT people and get them frustrated because there are ways of listening on the wire and capturing credentials, capturing hashed credentials, passing them on to other systems, using logging in as other people, trying to trick people to give you their username and password by having pop-ups on their system, trying to intercept traffic. Also, most of the time, people do not have the same safeguards internally that they do have externally for open ports. They don't have the same hygiene. And so oftentimes, I'm able to find things that they forgot they had open that gives me access to their systems, command line access, and then I'm able to take that and go and lateral move. So breakdown, you've got your social engineering, your Wi-Fi, your external web applications, your external network, and your internal network. Those are the five major areas of pen testing. Oh, and mobile apps. We also do mobile apps. iOS and Android apps, we pen test and hack those too.
And I'll interject here, Ravi. One thing that I'm going to ask Kurt this question kind of almost as a devil's advocate. So, Kurt, as you know, to do internal pen testing, you have to either sit behind the firewall, ship a box that they plug in, or they download a special virtual machine build based on their environment that will allow you to connect in. Similarly, with a web app, you'll typically do an authenticated test where you actually have them provide you with credentials. What is the value in that, and why do so many frameworks like PCI, like ISO 27001, like NIST, say that you have to conduct internal pen testing as well as authenticated web app testing? Kurt, why do those have to be done, And I mean, if you can't break in, then what's the value of us authenticating in and trying to hack? Can you explain that to our audience?
Sure. So the first of all, let's talk about the authenticated portal for the web application. Oftentimes, companies will not trust the random stranger coming to their website, and they'll do a really good job of making sure their landing pages and their login pages are secure. But they think that their customer's never going to get hacked. Their customer's password's never going to get stolen. Their customer is on their side. So their customer's never going to try and hack them. Well, the customers, whether for malicious or not, customers oftentimes use the same password on multiple sites. And we have the new password stuffing attacks that go around a lot now. And
yes.
If another site is hacked where a password is stolen, that password could be used against your site. And then now all of a sudden your customer's a bad guy. Your customer wants to break in. Your customer's going through all of the pages that are behind the login portal and trying to do things like SQL injection attacks or cross-site scripting attacks or local or remote file inclusion attacks. And they are able to get more because you, the owner of the company, didn't ever think that maybe your customers might be actually a source of attack. So that's with web application ones, we always say, please let us do an authenticated pen test because you never know when your customer is going to have their password stolen. Now, that's why PCI requires the authenticated too, because they understand the risk is actually very much larger behind that login portal. And then as for the internal, machines get compromised. If I'm a hacker, and that's why you see the average time, it changes all the time, but when I recently looked, like, it was still 170 days where a hacker stays inside an internal network and they're undetected. So in 170 days, they've managed to figure out exactly what everything you do in there, and they've moved slow, and they've stayed under the radar, and they've tried to make sure they're never seen. And then all of a sudden you realize they are inside your domain controller, they're inside your databases, they already have your data, they've already exfiltrated it, you didn't even know. And because of that, that's that internal element that people don't understand and don't realize that there's all these different attacks the hackers can do that they don't usually see on a normal daily basis, that's why internal pen tests are so important as well, because to try and shorten that timeline where the hacker's inside the network, to put up enough tripwires here and there that the hacker will trip over, if they get in, we can get them out, to put layers of defense in place to make sure they can't get too far, to restrict access so that very few people, even of valid employees, could even get somewhere, so the hacker has less people he can hack that will get him access to keys to the kingdom. So that's very much, both of them are key to building a proper, good defensive hygiene for a company to make sure the hackers can't win.
And I'll never forget, Kurt, one of the first web app pen tests that you did for me when I was at that other cybersecurity company. You called and you were almost giddy and you said, hey, I'm just about to download their entire database. Now, you actually didn't, but you said, I'm one keystroke away from doing that. And that was an authenticated test, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So that was using a blind SQL injection attack, and that was one of our first tests together. The results of SQL injection still are successful about 20% of the time. We went back through all the pen tests we'd done and counted how many times a SQL injection attack was successful. It's still about 1 to 2 out of every 10 I'm able to get contents of databases through SQL injection. But this one was a blind time-based SQL injection one. So it was measuring the amount of time it took for an error to come back from a page variable that I would submit as a variable. And then it would say, oh, this took longer to come back for this character A and then they're adding the character B. That means character B is probably the correct one because it had less work it needed to do to figure out it was correct. And then what you do is you can map in the database character by character, and it takes an afternoon or a weekend, but you can literally search, okay, is the second character in the first table this? Is it this? Okay, is that all right? So what's the third character? And then the funny thing was is that when we came back and said, you're vulnerable, they said, oh, we've never seen this before. They didn't even know it was possible to use the speed with which errors are returned to find out the characters in a database. And so they fixed it, but then their fix actually made it so it was fully now normal a SQL injection attack. So now I can just download it. I just do one character stream, and that's what I called you and said, hey, I'm one keystroke away from downloading the internet. We need to talk to them. They made it worse. So, and then, of course,
yeah,
they fixed it right away after that.
They fixed it.
Yeah, they did. They fixed it right away. But that's what we do. Even if in the middle of the pen test, we come across anything that's really vulnerable, Robbie, like the company's at risk, we'll stop the pen test. We'll call them directly. I've called people at 3 a.m. saying, look, you're really in danger here. And they will pull all the developers together and they'll get it fixed right away. But oftentimes it's like, well, I didn't even know that was possible. I hear that all the time.
Wow, that's really alarming. I didn't quite hear it from that perspective before, but it's really eye-opening. Now, Kurt, let's get into the real juicy stuff here. What's the coolest hack you've ever done, or the juiciest data that you've ever exploited or come across or so forth?
These are the fun ones. Now, I'd like to say that it was exactly like Hollywood. So there was this time where there was explosions and gunfire all around me. I'm like 6'2" pounds all muscle. Yeah, right. And while I'm hacking, having two people type on the keyboard at the same time, and we're stopping the hacker, and all these screens are popping up. And real pen testing is about, of a 20-hour pen test, it's about 18 hours of combing through data, combing through logs, trying things, and then there's 2 hours of, oh gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I did this. 2 hours of excitement. But some of the fun ones that I've had, there was one where it was a law firm that they had a video camera system open to the public, and they were trying to keep, they had good reasons for it, but it was vulnerable to a hidden hard-coded password. So I was able to get in with them once I found it. I was able to get in, and they had cameras inside their boardrooms and on their cabinets. And so I called the person up, and I said, hey, I can see the legal documents that you're using. And so that was, they were like, oh, okay, well, they shut it off right away, and they're fixed. They're doing great. But another one, I was sitting there on an internal network, and I caught the hash of an internal employee's help desk employee. And I ran it through John the Ripper and saw that it was like password 01 was the password. And I thought these were fairy tales. I thought no one would actually have a password that was just password. But this one was. It was a password 01, and it was a help desk employee. So her access gave me access to their HR environment. And so it gave me access to a shared drive in their HR. So I went through the shared drive and start going through the documents that are on that shared drive, and I find payroll forms and list of actual salaries in an Excel spreadsheet of the CEO, the CFO, how much they made last year, how much they're paid. So I just took a screenshot of that and sent it over. I whited out all the numbers, so that I don't want to send to their head IT guy, look, this is how much your CEO makes. So, but I whited that out, and then I sent it over. Said, I think this is a problem, and oh wow, the response. The response was very quick to get that fixed. Things like that. There was one more that I really enjoyed. There's a great tool that I use all the time. It's Responder. It's Responder.python, the PY. It's an LMNRR, or NetBIOS poisoning attack, and it is commonly used with pass the hash attacks. I chain it with a couple of tools. The Empire PowerShell is one that I use. And so what it does is it, when someone goes in a Windows system, when someone says, "Hey, I want to go somewhere," who does this IP belong to? Or what does this DNS name belong to? Because they're trying to get to that system. Well, Windows is really helpful, and they'll have rather than have your DNS controller respond and say, "Oh, it's so and so, it's over here. This is where you go." The whole system is helpful. A computer next to you will say, "Oh, I know where that is. You go over here." Well, what you can do with these poisoning attacks is you can say, "Oh, okay, well, I don't trust that you are actually correct. Could you please send me the hashed password of the person that's logged in on your system to verify that you really are who you say you are?" And they'll happily do it. They're so helpful. Sure, here's your hashed password. Well, then you can take, as long as the company isn't using SMB signing, you can take that hash, you don't even have to know the password, and just start sending it to other systems and saying, "Oh, by the way, I'm this person. Let me in." And so I did this with one, and I got into their domain controller. And so I got access as one of the IT engineers. And so already it's like, okay, this is a big deal. But I start going through, I use Mimikatz, which I pull the passwords out of memory there on that system, and I see a password that I'm like, that's interesting. I've never seen that before. And it was an older password from before there had been a turnover, and it accessed. It was a short password. It was like 7 characters, and allowed me to get everywhere. And so I threw it into PSExec CrackMapExec. Sorry, it was CrackMapExec, and then that just logged me into every system. And so when I came back the next day, I said, by the way, I am now an admin on every single system in your network, all because of just a single hash. A hash that they sent me, that they gave me, they allowed me in, basically. So lots of fun things that happened over the years.
Well, that raised some eyebrows too. But I know when Kurt does this, like you said, he always does it very diplomatically. What one of the challenges, Robbie, in hiring from a business owner's perspective, when you hire a pen tester, like Kurt was a no-brainer from the beginning. He had, as you can see, he is so fun to deal with. He has a good demeanor. He's very professional. He writes well. And he's even bumped his head a few times, haven't you, Kurt? As we've dealt with clients, he'll say, oh,
yeah,
I'll do that. And every every time we do pen tests, I think they get better. Just a couple of things that as you listen to Kurt talk about, his penetration testing and into the mind of a hacker, so to speak, you notice that there are multiple tools that he uses. And that, again, going back to the very beginning of this podcast, can you see the difference between a pen test and a vulnerability scan? A vulnerability scan is one tool. Let's say it's Saint, or Kurt likes to use OpenBOSS, which is an open source vulnerability scanner. He knows how to tweak and run it and use it. Nessus from Tenable is probably the most popular, Rapid7. But the reality is, as you can see, Kurt's using no less than 10. I don't know, is it more than that, Kurt? How many tools
do you use on a
typical web app? And so let's take a web app and an internal pen test. How many tools do you actually use?
40, 50. We did a count once. You asked me to give you a list, and you're like, what are all the tools you use? I thought it was only like 5 or 10, and then I started adding it up, and I'm like, about 20 to 30 for this and 20 to 30 for this. It was, so between about 40 to 50 tools that I use on as part of a simple internal and web app pen test.
So you're really like the professional at Tunex or Pep Boys. You know, you take your car in to get fixed, and they're not just going to pull out a spark plug socket and say, this is all you need. they've got a whole toolkit with thousands of tools sitting in it, right?
Yep. Well, that's always been really nice because you're able to explain this to customers and let them know that the pen tests are being done this way. And you're always have been very good at letting them set things up so it's easy to talk to them, and then they're ready and such for a good pen test. And so it takes all sides, to be clear. It takes all sides of good communication, and you are the guy that runs the show and finds the clients and gets them set up to make sure they do well. So for me, I get to come in, and they're already all prepped, and everything goes well. So it's actually much easier for me when having someone with your caliber selling the pen tests.
You're too kind. So, Robbie, just to underscore what Kurt's been saying here, and for our podcast listeners, this underscores the importance of a pen test and the value of the authentication, because he's finding things that, let's face it, one key thing that Kurt said is a hacker will be into your system for 170 days. I've actually heard a number of studies that say 180 or more. It depends on the study, whether it's Poneman or Verizon. But the reality is those figures are all around 3 months plus. Right. And so think about this. And I have to be very generic here in I can't mention companies or names, but I worked for a cybersecurity company, and a former prospect of that company came to my attention with a story of a hacker that had not only been into their network, but had gotten their manufacturing plans, all their partners' plans, their CEO, CFO, COO's salaries, social security numbers, you name it, all of the important information. And basically, he sent them an email and said, this is what I found, this is what I have, and unless you pay me, and at this point in time, see, this was several years ago, he said, unless you pay me 14 bitcoins, which was several thousand dollars. Now it would be probably $100,000 ransom. He said, then I am going to A, leak your designs to China, B, leak that to all of your partners that you have privacy agreements with, that your information, that their information has been breached, and I'm going to publish to the world all of your critical data. Well, they did nothing. This company, they kind of started fibrillating, you know, like a heart in AFib or something. And so 2 weeks later, they get an email from this very same hacker saying, did I not tell you that you needed to act? So he'd been into their calendars as well, Robbie, and he saw that you know, some of the executives had been golfing. And he said, so tell so-and-so and so-and-so to stop golfing and pay attention. Well, long story short, it didn't end well for this company. This company had failed to do a cybersecurity assessment, and they had failed to engage professionals like Kurt and myself to come in and do a litmus test and figure out where they are, identify the gaps in the controls, and implement proper policy. And of course, pen testing, had Kurt pen tested that environment first, he would have found how the guy got in. I guarantee it. But that's another reason why we do these. It's so critical that organizations, particularly web app and SaaS organizations, do these pen tests every year to find out whether new code updates have introduced vulnerabilities. Because as you can see, the results in the end can be disastrous.
Right. Okay, excellent. Now, I really enjoyed the content of today's podcast. Kurt, to you first. What are the key takeaways here for IT and security leaders listening into today's show, especially, you know, during this pandemic phase that we're going through right now?
And especially because of the pandemic, there is high rotation. There are people working from home. The threat landscape has changed. Simply accept the fact that there are things in your environment that have been forgotten over the years or that are not being taken care of. I've never, ever, ever done a pen test, especially an internal one, where I've not found something. Know that that they're there. So adopt a regular third-party checking of your environment. Having someone come in, because if you use your own IT guys, they already have preconceived biases and notions of where things are that single piece of hardware that's vulnerable is still going to get missed. So use a third party. Get someone to come in. Make sure they're thorough. That's the other thing. There's a lot of pen testing companies out there that are not thorough. I check every single port. I spend hours doing the same thing over and over again with Netcat, seeing what's on a port, or going to a website, or going through Nmap logs. But that's usually where I find things that when they come back, they say, I didn't even know that. We've had 7 pen tests before, and they've never found this. How did you find this? Because I check every port. I have found that that's the best way to do it. But so for the leaders, I would say, understand that you have things in your environment that you don't know that are there. Make sure you get a thorough, good pen test done every single year, if not more often, if you can, at least once a year, if not more.
And Robbie, I would just echo what Kurt said as well. And I'll do that by way of one final story. Again, at a former company, which will remain unnamed, one of the clients, they had the greatest cybersecurity. They'd had maturity assessments. They had policy in place. They had incident response, fortunately, but one of the IT guys was playing around with a proof of concept, and they spun up he left what we'd call a loose end sitting out on one of their cloud servers. Now, I don't remember if that was AWS or Azure, Google, it doesn't matter. And they left that production server vulnerable with a link back to the corporate environment. So despite all of the thinking that I'm safe, I'm secure, well, maybe you are, but you better check. Things are so dynamic. Kurt has talked about this before in other podcasts and on other calls with other clients. Cybersecurity is a continual effort. It's like going to the gym, Robbie. If I stop after 2 weeks, I'll lose my cardio fitness. And after about a month, your muscular fitness, meaning your strength and muscular endurance, will then start to degrade as well. It's a constant process. I constantly have to get up every morning, do my hike, do my run, and then usually sometime in the afternoon or evening, I'll sneak away for a 20 to 40 minute iron pumping session. If I don't do that, I'll atrophy. And cybersecurity is the same way. There's ultimate entropy in cybersecurity. When you're thinking in pride that you are the most secure company on the planet, you're probably not. And so it's a continual process of checking. And so as a takeaway today, Robbie, I would just say make sure that you are doing your vulnerability scans quarterly and your penetration tests at least annually. And if you need help, you can hire us. We'll get Kurt on the line to help do a fractional information security officer for a year to get you in alignment. We've helped a lot of companies for a fraction of the cost of a half a million a year CISO. And don't take your cybersecurity for granted. It's got to be an important part of your business continuity plan. So that's what I'd say.
Excellent, Greg. And how do people reach out to you? Best way?
Well, one of the best ways is to just hit our website, webchecksecurity.com. There's all kinds of information there. There's even a guide to validation of PCI, which is so common. So many businesses accept credit cards. If they go to resources, they can download that guide, as well as which self-assessment questionnaire to use. But most importantly, Robbie, they can fill out a quick form, and that will come directly to us. I see those. And we can then set up a call, discuss their needs, and so webchecksecurity.com. That's the best way to get in touch.
Okay, thank you. Kurt and Greg, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Honored to be here as always.
Take care. Have a great day.